Hey, On Demand listener, this is Meg Malone, VPR's digital producer, just letting you know that this podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. How prepared are individual states to thwart efforts by foreign countries to conduct cyber attacks against their election systems? Well, former special counsel Robert Mueller testified this summer that there's no question that the Russians tried to interfere with the 2016 presidential election. And Mueller says efforts to sabotage the security of this country's voting systems are actually happening right now.
Oh, it wasn't a single attempt. They're doing it as we sit here. And they expect to do it during the next campaign. In fact, one of the other areas that we have to look at are many more countries are developing capability to replicate what the Russians had done.
How serious are these threats, and what is the state of Vermont doing to ensure the security of the 2020 elections? Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look at this issue from the state's perspective and also the local level. With us today, Secretary of State Jim Condos and also Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. Great to have you both here today to talk about this very important topic.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Secretary Condos, those were pretty strong words from Robert Mueller, that right now, as we speak, there are foreign governments who are plotting efforts to manipulate the voting systems in some states. Given that, how do you feel about the security of Vermont's system?
Well, first, let me just say that I agree with Robert Mueller on his comments. And the fortunate part, Vermont's considered one of the leaders across the country. We started back in 2013 with a real focus on cybersecurity for our systems, not just election, but all of our Secretary of State systems. We started with a vulnerability and risk assessment, which is your basic. It's really an in-depth look at all of your systems to see where you might have vulnerabilities. They scan your systems looking for the quote-unquote open doors to see if there's any weak spots. And we worked from that point forward. And as we put our new system in line in 2015, we addressed pretty much everything at that time. So it really has, we've been working conscientiously. And I think anybody that knows anything about cybersecurity and computers will tell you this is a ongoing new normal. We're going to it's a race without a finish line. We're going to continue to have to look at this every day, and we do. We focus on it from a regular basis. I would say that we're in pretty good shape.
And when you look at the vote tabulation systems that are used in communities all across the state, is one of the reasons that Vermont's in pretty good shape is because these vote tabulation machines are not hooked up to the internet?
Well, that's one factor of it, and I think John can speak to that as well because he actually uses them during every election. But the whole process is in chain of command, chain of custody for the memory cards, for the machines themselves, the tabulators, and what they actually do. They're really just a scanning machine. They look at the paper ballot, and this is the key to all this is the fact that we have an audit trail available. We have a paper ballot for every vote cast. So we can go back and do an election audit post-election, which we do. Within 30 days of the general election, we randomly select a number of towns, and then we actually look at every ballot in that town and then also look at every race on that ballot. And we've been doing scans or audits since 2006 and never had a discrepancy that couldn't be explained.
So the individual towns tabulate their ballots, and then on election night, do they transmit that to you electronically? Is that a possible weak link in the system?
It is, but it's also an area that we have focused on to strengthen our defenses.
So you feel confident that those results are accurate and are protected?
Correct.
John Odom, looking at it from the perspective of Montpelier, you're the city clerk here. How do you feel about the security of the city system and protecting people's votes?
Well, I feel pretty good about it. As you know, I'm involved in some of this outside of Vermont, so I feel that's a particular burden to be able to practice what I preach. I think at the local level, there's a couple key parts that we own that the Secretary of State doesn't. Chain of custody is very, very important. We're very serious about that in Vermont. And, you know, the tabulators stay in the vaults. They only come out. They have to be accompanied by a couple election officials. Election officials stay near them during the election. And the physical security setup that we have does not really allow anyone to get close to it. And since these things aren't networked, they aren't on wireless, actually physically getting to them is the way you'd have to cause mischief, basically. So we've got that covered. You know, we take a few extra precautions in Montpelier. We, you know, stay off wireless, that sort of thing. But no, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, you have to pay attention, and that's the key.
So Montpelier uses an optical scan system. So the person fills out the ballot with a little circle, and that gets fed into a machine. Are you saying that with proper oversight, it would be very difficult for somebody to manipulate the election results, but that physically it is possible?
It's physically possible. Again, that physical security is what's key. There's a few ways you could mess with the machine. Most of them would be simply causing mischief. And they'd all be, you know, you'd have to set up your little laptop or something and actually physically connect to it. You know, you could hijack the printer and have it print out something in Russian to freak people out, or have it, maybe that particular tabulator finish, shut down the election, and you just go to another tabulator. So there's a few ways. It's theoretically possible to get into the memory card, but it would be very, very challenging and very time intensive, and of course we control access.
And I think it's important to realize at this point that if I wanted to break into the Montpelier machines, what it would take is I would have to break into City Hall, break into the town clerk's office, break into his vault, find the chips, the memory cards, reconfigure them, put them all back, and get out before anybody caught me. And it's just it's kind of the idea that you have resilience and redundancy in place that helps do this. The same thing happens with our voter registration database. We back it up every night at the Secretary of State's office, the statewide checklist. So we back it up every night, and if someone were to be able to breach into our system and destroy it, delete it, change it, whatever, and we found it out, we would be able to reset it 24 hours back. We'd only lose 24 hours worth of data. And on top of that, we have same-day voter registration, so nobody's going to be denied.
Secretary Kondos, the U.S. House has given its approval to a bill that provides almost an additional $600 million to help states beef up their election security programs. That measure is now being considered by the Senate, and in just the last couple of days, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has indicated that he will support at least a couple hundred million dollars for this purpose. But in doing a story on this issue earlier this week, I asked you what would happen if Congress didn't act on this legislation, and here's what you said.
What we're basically doing without any additional funding is sending town clerks out with BB guns to fight Russian tanks. And I think that, you know, it's a losing battle to do that.
Sending our town clerks out with BB guns to fight against Russian tanks. Is that really what it is?
When you think about it in the grand scheme, it is kind of in that mode. I mean, you're talking about very sophisticated hackers that Russia is employing, or China, North Korea, Iran. And what we're trying to do is make sure that our systems are backed up, are defended, are we try to stop any penetration of them. Example, we do a weekly hygiene scan of our systems through the Department of Homeland Security. Every week since before the 2016 election, Department of Homeland Security has done a hygiene scan. A hygiene scan is basically the analogy I will give you is someone coming up to your door at your house at night. And rattling the doorknob to see if it's unlocked, looking through a window, trying to see if they can find a way in. That's basically what they do, and they do it on a weekly basis.
And that's something that's happening. I think you've told us before. This is happening thousands of times a day to the state system, right?
Yes, that's correct. We are experiencing scans on a regular basis. In fact, as you know, Bob, a year ago, in August, we reported to the Department of Homeland Security, the Center for Internet Security, and to the FBI attempts by what were at that time considered to be Russia trying to get into our system. Now, we also recognize that you can mask an IP address, but the fact was that we reported it. Prior to 2016, we did not have a communication system in place to be able to do that. After we had reported it to Department of Homeland Security and they investigated it, they were able to find that those same IP addresses appeared in a couple of other states, and they issued a nationwide alert within 24 or 36 hours.
And you must be pleased that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has changed his mind about this issue.
Absolutely. This was critical. I mean, the $380 million that was passed and sent out to the states in 2018 was 10% of the Help America Vote Act money that was left over and not appropriated from 2004. So that $380 million turned into, for Vermont, $3 million. A place like California got about $34 million. And this is key to us being able to do things. For instance, for the town clerks, we put in multi-factor authentication in order to get into like you would for a bank. Online banking. It's a multi-factor where you get an additional step that you have to go through in order to get into the system. And we've done additional penetration testing. We're going to be doing some vulnerability assessments again leading into the 2020 year.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Dennis, who's calling from Winchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Dennis. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. The call that I have is we use LHS machines, and in order to, even before, when we, on the morning of election day, we have to run a zero tape. So you have all the tapes of all the candidates, and they got to be equal to zero. If they don't, you pull that card out and you put in the backup card. If that doesn't work, then you go to the manual ballot and you count all the ballots by hand.
John Odom, does that sound like a familiar procedure?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we do. And it's, you know, these cards are very difficult to mess with. I'd be shocked if a zero tape did not run zero. This is where you have a great advantage, honestly, to using old technology. You hear the new technology versus old technology is a false dichotomy. But getting into those cards, you'd have to have some pretty serious legacy equipment. So those cards, the zero list, you know, the zero report just shows how well they're doing. They're terrific. And, you know, it makes me think, too, with as far as BB guns go, with all due respect to my friend Secretary Condos, I feel as a local election officials, we've got an array of howitzers. We're doing great. We've got a lot of good procedures that protect us. And I look forward to the money coming down from the federal government more to keep our howitzers current, maybe keep them loaded and adapt to some of the changes in technology. But I feel pretty well armed right now.
Let's talk to Susan, who's calling from Rutland. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm very encouraged by what I've heard so far about the paper ballots and the way they're being counted. That's quite good about that. The one thing I'm worried about is same-day registration. It seems to me that that's a possibility for causing manipulating elections in that somebody could vote in more than one state. Of course, that's only one vote, but still, it still bothers me. When I was living in California, we had to register, I think, at least 6 weeks before we could vote. And that seems like a good way to keep it more in balance.
Okay, Susan, thanks very much for your phone call. John Odom, let's say somebody wants to register, same-day registration in Montpelier. What do they have to do to prove to you that they're a legitimate voter?
Well, when you register in person, perjury attaches. Vermont is very much leans on the benefit of the doubt of the citizen, of the voter. So it's a sworn oath that they have to swear. It's basically registering to vote, and then we get them in there. I think, just in defense of same-day registration, that's an enormously effective tool for us in the face of potential voter fraud. If the statewide system does have some sort of problem with it, it's terrific. I hear the concerns of the caller. Right now, the truth is that the problems we have in the election system have to do with not getting people in to vote, not getting them registered, not getting full participation. I think from just a strictly pragmatic sense, if that's the problem, that's where we need to work. If the problem becomes actual voter fraud, which, is virtually non-existent, other than that issue with the North Carolina district, then maybe we shift our priorities. But the priorities are clear right now. We've got to get people registered. We got to get them in to vote.
How hard would it be for me to come into the Montpelier City Hall on election day, do same-day voter registration in Montpelier, vote, and then drive to Waterbury and do the same thing?
Well, we're all feeding into the same database. So when somebody comes and registers, we put that directly in at the time. So if that person then goes up to another town, they try to register up there, we always check to see if they're registered somewhere else. Just to clarify things, a lot of folks will not be sure where they're supposed to vote. Maybe they live in East Montpelier and they come to Montpelier. We can find them and tell them you should be voting in East Montpelier. Same thing applies on election day. If I get them registered, I put them into the system, they drive up to Burlington, try to register there, they're going to come up. Because we do verify with driver's license numbers. So that does go into the system so we know who is who.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, what are the threats to the state of Vermont's security to the 2020 election system and what's happening at the local level? Our guests, Secretary of State Jim Condos and Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. Let's talk to Peggy, who's calling from Williston. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. Jim, you and I briefly met one time a long time ago with Vin Faluzzi, and we had lunch together.
Ah, yes.
Sheraton, I think it was. So, hello. Jim, this is kind of off base a little bit, but I just finished reading the first half of the Mueller report, and I was absolutely stunned at the amount of information that was in there regarding the invasion, for lack of a better word, of the Russians into our election system. And I was just wondering, are we ever going to be able to fix this nationally, or is this, it seems to me like in Washington, D.C. right now, it's like herding cats. It's like nothing seems to be getting done. And I just wanted to see what you thought about that.
Well, let me just say first that I think, Peggy, you will find that secretaries of state across the country, R's and D's, are focused on protecting the integrity of our elections. We are trying to protect and defend against defend our democracy from these attacks. I think we've all gotten smarter since 2016. Please remember that in August of 2016, Secretary Jay Johnson of Department of Homeland Security called the secretaries to a conference call in which he informed us that they had detected that Russia was trying to, or they didn't tell us Russia at that time, it was afterwards, but they told us that they were detecting that there was some intrusion attempts being made. The good news is there was only one state at that time that was breached, and that was Illinois, and it was really their voter registration database. Since that time, the Russian attacks have really been about not so much getting into changing votes. They realized quickly that it was not going to be – our system is – part of the security of our system is that it is decentralized. Here in Vermont, we have one system that we all use, but we're separate from every other state. And in some states, they have different – they go by counties, and they operate different systems in different counties. So it would be very difficult to actually change votes. What they attempted to do, what we started to see, was more of a attempt to get into our voter registration databases, to our election night reporting sites. So we've taken steps, and I can't tell you all the details behind it, because if I did, I might as well, you know, put it in an envelope and send it to the Kremlin. But we have taken steps to protect and defend our own systems. And I think that this is happening across the country. Obviously at different levels, but I can tell you that here in Vermont, we have been focused on this since 2013.
John Odom, some of the things I've read nationally, rather than efforts to change vote totals, what some people are worried about is just a total crashing of the voter registration system on election day itself. And that would just cause massive chaos everywhere. Is that something to be concerned about?
Sure. A distributed denial of service attack is certainly a common one. It doesn't take a lot of technical ability. There's a market for those kinds of resources if you go on to the dark web. It's a concern. I think what you're seeing is, you know, states working on, you know, through servers like, you know, Amazon servers that have a really large capacity for redundancy. And then at the local level, we also are all working from paper. So we have paper printouts of the checklist. So that would be the fallback for us locally, and we could keep going with the elections without missing a beat.
I don't know, Bob, if you've caught this, but we have a non-technological solution to a lot of this: paper ballots, paper checklists. Those are the things that make our systems work, because not only is there a paper trail, but we have an audit trail that we can work from.
Let's talk to Mike, who is calling from Starksboro. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call. Greetings, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that I work for DHS myself in Customs and Immigration Services in the IT field. And I'm very encouraged hearing about the paper ballots. I just wanted to say that I read a passage in a book this morning that was hilarious to me. It went something along the lines of, the only unhackable computer is one that's running a secure operating system, welded inside a steel safe, buried in a coal mine, covered in tons of concrete, defended by a bunch of SAS men and two armored divisions, and switched off. So I'm very encouraged to hear about the paper ballots still being in use, and keep them to good work.
Thank you, Mike. And just for the record, Vermont actually put it into statute that we required paper ballots back around 2004. Although we have always used paper ballots, we made sure we memorialized it by adding that to the statutes. And in fact, we just completed some new rulemaking a year or so ago, and we said that this is around the acquisition of new equipment, and we said that anything still had to be a paper ballot still had to be read. So we believe that there are approximately 40 states that are using paper ballots now. And there's about five states actually do not use paper ballots at all. There's an additional five states who are using kind of a hybrid. They use a paper ballot in some places and not in others. But I think slowly but surely they're all switching over. I know Virginia, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey in the last 12 to 18 months have moved to put paper ballots into place.
Let's talk to Lucas, calling from Shelburne. Hey, Lucas, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know this might be a little bit outside of the scope of your discussion, but hopefully not outside the scope of your expertise. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to the practicality of these decentralizing steps in states bigger than Vermont, that maybe it's a little bit more difficult to aggregate that kind of technology.
Let me just say that I think here in Vermont, what we have is a system where the towns are actually a creature of the state, and as such, We actually work with the towns to provide the equipment, to provide technology for the election management system, the paper ballots, et cetera. What you see in other states, a lot of the states, and most of them are the ones outside of New England, where there's a lot of strong county government, is a lot of the states actually allow the state, the counties, to decide what they're going to, how they're going to operate their election systems. It still falls under the overall oversight of the state, but the counties actually run it. So it really depends on the state. And I think, you know, like in some states, I'll give you an example, Florida, on a county basis, they are allowed to purchase their own machines. Here in Vermont, that has to be done with my okay, and we have strict rules as to how we determine which tabulator we will pick.
John Odom, in addition to being the city clerk in Montpelier, you're also, quote, a certified ethical hacker. I love that phrase. It's one of my favorite phrases I've heard in some time. Certified ethical hacker. What does that mean?
Well, it means I passed a test that certifies me as a penetration tester, which is essentially professional hacking. Penetration testing is trying to knock down the walls from the outside to get into a system, as opposed to, you know, the security administrator who's trying to build those walls. So I'm trained in hacking, yeah, and knocking things down. That's why I always go out to the DEF CON conference in Las Vegas every year, where they have the voting village, where they actually try to hack these machines and give a report. I love this stuff.
Have you been successful?
You know, when I get there, I end up talking to a lot of people. I pull the machines apart, but I don't get in there very much. Not really. I'd love to do more.
I mean, do you think that you would find out that the systems in some states were vulnerable if you were able to hack into them successfully?
Well, at Voting Village and DEF CON, there's a whole bunch of people. We have a sprawling variety of voting machines, and they get into them. Some of them are more vulnerable than others. Some of them are dangerously vulnerable. Now, I'll tell you one thing. When I was there, and I ended up talking to a lot of folks about the machines we use, the AccuVote optical scanners, and we had a few of them that were being taken apart and examined. I told several hackers, you know, I would rather have these machines working for me than any other thing in this room. And to a person, they agreed.
Jim Condos, it is very interesting. You know, at some point, I'm sure 10 or 15 years ago, touchscreen voting, people were talking about internet voting, all sorts of high-tech ways. But it almost, and correct me if I'm wrong, it almost seems like those new technologies are more susceptible to being hacked into than, as John Odom just mentioned, this machine that's been in Montpelier probably for the last 15 or 20 years.
So, yes, you're sort of right. And here's the point I would make. Keep in mind, in 2000, we had the Florida debacle with hanging chads. So that was a paper ballot, but it had... You had to poke a hole, basically. You had to knock to count your vote, you had to knock a hole through the paper. And there were what they called the hanging chads. It was right after that, in the 2002, when Help America Vote Act passed, that all the greatest thing since sliced bread came down, and it was touchscreen technology. So there was a lot of push to have towns go to the touchscreen technology, or a lot of states. And what we've now found out is that that's not such a good idea, because the screens can get out of whack. You could have, like, say, four choices, and you touch the second choice, but it actually records on the third choice, just because of the way the screen kind of goes out of whack. And in a lot of the cases, those machines did not have a paper backup, and so there was no real way to audit those machines. Vermont has, you know, in our frugal, independent state of mind that we have, we did not go out and buy the latest technology right away. What we've done is stuck with the machine that we have. And I want to put one other plug that we do with these machines. A lot of states... You know, for instance, our optical scan machines, if you have a typical district in the state of Vermont, it's probably around 4,000 people at the most. Whereas if you had the same machine on a city block in New York City, you might have 300,000 people voting on that machine at any given election. So you can see right off the bat that our machine doesn't get as much use as some of these other states. But we also do an annual maintenance that the state pays for of the town machines so that they're kept up to speed. That really does help, and it helps us allay the fears that there's a problem with those machines. And again, it's an optical scan. All it does is scan the ballot, and we still have a paper ballot at the end.
Now, under Vermont election law, do towns have to use optical scan if they reach a certain threshold of voters?
That is correct. Several years ago, the legislature mandated that a town of 1,000 voters or more would be required to have an optical scan machine. And part of the thinking was the most occasions where we had errors where we would find errors, you know, after a recount or whatever, it was in those towns that were hand count towns, because the human eye, when you start getting tired, you start seeing things, and it's not as accurate as the optical scan machine. Now, on the other hand, I will say that the optical scan machine might miss somebody because somebody circled the name instead of fill in the dot, or they put an X through it, or the check mark rather than fill in the circle. But that every ballot is looked at by the Board of Civil Authority when they're getting ready to count. They go through and quickly look for things like that where there might be a discrepancy in the vote.
It's not quick.
Well, yeah, it's not quick. That's true.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at election security in Vermont and also at the local level. With us, Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. Also, Secretary of State Jim Condos. Let's talk to Joe in Bridport. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm wondering if any attention has been paid in this whole process to the German elections, which have been reputed to be the safest in the world for a while. Whether they still are, I don't know.
Secretary Condos, do you know anything about the German system?
I do not.
John?
I don't either, but now you've got me curious.
Joe, are you still there?
Well, yes, I am.
Do you know what the Germans do that makes things so secure?
they have a lot of duplication of effort, much more scrutiny as to whether things are accurate. Let's put it that way.
Okay, Joe, you've got some interest here to find out what it is that's going on in Germany. Thanks very much for your phone call. Secretary Condos, I did want to touch on this issue of overseas ballots and a letter that you wrote yesterday to President Trump involving the Universal Postal Union, the UPU. First of all, you're going to have to explain to us what that is and what your concerns are.
So there are 195 countries that are members of the UN, of the United Nations, and 190 or 192 of those are members of what's called the Universal Postal Union. And that is a compact between those countries for the rates to be charged for sending mail back and forth across the borders. What we require here in Vermont and in most of the country, what we require is that we can email a ballot overseas to whether it's someone that's living abroad or to a military service person who's serving somewhere else in the world. We can email that ballot to them, but they can fill it out online, but then they have to print it and mail it back to us, or they can print it and then fill it out and mail it back to us. But it still has to get received by the town clerk, each of our 246 town clerks, by 7 p.m. on election night. And that's why in 2009 they moved, they made a mandate, the federal government did, that we had to have ballots ready to be mailed out to them or sent to them 45 days ahead of time of the election. if this goes away, if you know, President Trump has, I guess I'll use the word threatened to pull out of this consortium, then, and he says what we will do is have a bilateral agreement with each of the countries. That means he's got to have 190 bilateral agreements put in place before the primaries start next year. And they, don't forget, the primaries start in February of next year. So, and then the general election is in November. It's highly unlikely that that you could get 190 bilateral agreements in place in order to facilitate the passage of it's not just it's commerce as well, but it's specifically our concern is with voters. And what we've asked, many of my colleagues, Republicans and Democrats, have sent contacted the president's office and let them know that we do not like this option. We think that they should remain in the union until such time as something else is ready to be put in place, not cancel it and then figure out how to do it.
And your concern is some of these votes won't be counted?
Yeah, there's probably 2 to 3 million overseas voters, when you're including our military, and those votes could be could not be recounted if we didn't get them back to the clerks in time.
John Odom, we were talking about advances in technology, touchscreen voting. I can remember a number of years ago, online voting seemed like, whoa, it seems like a great idea. But now it seems like people are backing off a little bit. With your hat of your certified ethical hacker on, online voting, is that something that you could cause some mischief with?
Absolutely. I have great concerns about that. People have not backed off. There's, it's full steam ahead in some circles. There are a lot of ways, theoretically, not so theoretically, that an individual's workstation could be compromised, either through malware, some sort of remote access, if they're working on Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi, a website they might have to go to vote could be a fake website. There's a lot of ways, and it counts on everybody having, you know, good antivirus software, good, you know, practices on their own computer, and you can't count on that. And it takes a very, very small number of people who don't do that, who may have their systems compromised at the local level, to cast enough fraudulent votes to change an election. That's what it always comes back to, these conversations about using blockchain as an actual medium for voting doesn't take into account the potential compromise of a local person's computer that they're using to vote with. And I don't see that changing. So I don't see myself ever being in favor of remote voting.
And in fact, I serve on I'm a national co-chair for Council of State Governments Overseas Voting Initiative. And one of the things that we're looking at is how can we get those ballots back from overseas? You know, if someone's on if you have somebody in the Navy and they're on a submarine and they're under the water, they don't always come up, you know, where to the point where they can get something out to us in terms of a ballot or whatever by mail, even. But at least it's secure. And what we have tried to do is say, look, this is not smart or efficient for us to go out and have 50 states try to figure out 50 different ways to secure an email ballot or a web portal ballot. If we're going to do this, we should do it as a government web portal that is secure, that we know is secure, that a single portal where it would be like a drop down. Okay, you vote. Bob Kinzel is overseas. He wants to vote in his state, which is Vermont, and in your town of Montpelier. And you would just do a drop down to get to your ballot and then be able to vote. But we're not there yet. And I agree with John. I don't see it happening in my future lifetime here, but it might in the future sometime.
Secretary Condos, there was also, it was fascinating to see a couple of states, Iowa and Nevada, being the two caucus states in the primary system coming up in February of 2020. And as a caucus state, they require voters to go to a specific location. I was out there in 2004 when Howard Dean was running for president, and I was in West Des Moines at the elementary school, and that was the site for the caucus for that district. And some people have been saying, well, you ought to open up the process more. Why not have a number that people could call in on and then be counted as a member of that caucus? Does that start to bring up some of the same problems that online voting brings up?
Absolutely. And you saw that earlier this summer where the Democratic National Committee has basically instructed Iowa. I'm not sure if they did with Nevada, but they definitely did in Iowa and said no online or technological access to the caucus. You have to be there.
So calling in to be there was rejected.
Yes.
John Onum, we're almost out of time, but I wonder, you know, you have told us you feel good about the Montpelier voting system and the security. Is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Anything that keeps me up at night? I wouldn't say there's anything that keeps me up at night. I think we're doing pretty well, although I recognize – here's what I recognize. In the real world, there are going to be hacks. It's going to happen. They could be small scale. They could be larger scale. The message I try to tell people is this is just the modern version of the old days where somebody might leave a bunch of boxes of absentee ballots in the vault and, you know, oh, they didn't get counted. We don't actually know the final result. We have to go back and include them. And so the final result is delayed 2 or 3 weeks. If we're doing everything right from the top to the bottom to secure ourselves against hacking, then that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a delay of the final vote, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. So if we're doing everything right, we're going to be okay.
And Secretary Condos, really at the bottom of all this is that voters need to have confidence that the system is accurate.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, we work closely with the town clerks. We had the Department of Homeland Security and the election infrastructure, ISAC, came up last week for the town clerk municipal conference. And we also do ongoing training for the clerks around election process. So this is something that we take very seriously, and I'm pleased to work with the town clerks across the state of Vermont.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion of security efforts at the town and state level to protect Vermont's election systems from any cyber attacks. Many thanks to our guest today, Secretary of State Jim Condos, also Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. We really appreciate you coming by and talking to us about this.
Thank you.